Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
You brought me!
咁堂弟约你出嚟，其实有啲嘢想请教你。你今早拎住嗰个手袋咧，唔知喺边处有得买咧？
你点解咁样问嘅？
我太太嘅个手袋同你嗰个一模一样。
我知道，我见过。你系想讲咩啊？我仲以为得我一个人知添。
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvin. It is Throwback Tuesday, and we're kicking off a whole week of looking at movies that focus on their aesthetics, right? That are beautiful to look at. And so we thought we'd start with one of the, I think, undisputed most beautiful films of all time, and that is 2000's In the Mood for Love, produced, directed, of course, by Wong Kar-wai.
Huge shoes, right? I mean, to say something is not just the most beautiful movie of all time, but it's often called one of the best movies of all time. And I feel like when you slap that tag on a film, it sets expectations so high that even someone like me who's watched the film, I often wonder if I'm going to be disappointed when I watch it, second or third time around. I'm so glad to report that this is one movie I think every time I watch it, I'm just going to love it more and more. And it's great to have films like that.
But also, I think what's interesting about In the Mood for Love is that it's not like one of those big, grand, blockbuster, big budget, visually pleasing sort of films. I think it's so cozy, it's so warm, and literally it's so perfectly named because it's called In the Mood for Love, right? If a mood was a movie, this would be the movie because it's so good at setting the pace, setting the space, setting the wherever it's taking place in. If someone could put a mood into a film, this would be it. So I guess when we say visually pleasing, that's what it means, instead of being big and bombastic and colorful and very in your face. It's not in your face at all.
So it was initially supposed to be called In the Mood for Food, which is crazy. That's a Fast and Furious title. No, it was originally supposed to be called A Story of Food, and then later on it was going to be called Secrets. And it only became In the Mood for Love, I think, like well into post-production when Wong Kar-wai happened to hear the song and, you know, like was listening to the song over and over again, and that's how it ended up that way. And I think that in some senses is a perfect backdrop for you to know about the movie, because the movie itself feels like that. It feels like a song that you're listening to over and over again. It feels more like a mood than anything else. It's a very loose narrative. There's hardly a narrative to speak of, really. It's just there are two people who are neighbors in a boarding house who moved in with their spouses, and eventually you come to realize that their spouses are having an affair with one another. And that leaves them lonely and isolated and growing closer and closer. And that's more or less the entire film. Even as you know that rumors are circling around them, even as you know that their neighbors are watching, their landladies are watching, all of that is more alluded to than anything else. The story really is a two-hander between Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung.
Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung, I think, are the heart of this film. The movie really lives and dies on their altar. And I don't know, if you talk about screen couples, chemistry, underplaying a role, they're such a perfect pair and they're so perfect for this film. I'm sure we'll get into them as actors later. But on that note of the story itself, you're right. It is actually just that. But it's stretched out to examine, I think, all of the nuances of what it's like to be in that scenario, all of the emotions, all of the unspoken things. But I think it's also worth saying that one of the things that's so interesting about In the Mood for Love is that you're almost seeing a slice of a story, because you actually don't get to know the spouses at all. And, you know, so you're really just seeing what happens between these two people. And even the way the film is shot, you know, people disappear off screen and then they appear around corridors. You see them through doorways. Everything is just parts of what has happened. And I love that feeling of us almost almost, I think, intruding into this one very personal aspect of two people's lives.
It's such a, like you mentioned the off-screen stuff and, you know, people just moving off-screen. There's so much that happens that we don't see. That while like three-quarters through the film, I was wondering if this is actually a movie about love for love's sake, or is it a movie about nostalgia and memory? Because Wong Kar-wai said that he specifically shot in Bangkok, I think, because it made him think about his childhood and the buildings that he grew up around and the kind of architecture that he remembered. So is it like something that you see through someone else's memory? Because that's how memory works, right? You see like bits and pieces here and there, you forget the bad stuff, you remember the good stuff. And I love that. I love that it never focuses on the people that it doesn't have to focus on. It focuses on the good people. It focuses on the people that you want to remember, but it never focuses on the two people who are having an affair, who brought the two leads to the situation in the first place, which was very deliberate. It also makes it very, like, you cannot depend on the narrators that are telling this story, like whether it is a true story in the first place or not. I just love that vibe. I love that whole whatever's going on there.
It's also quite comedic because they're actually almost like Charlie Brown adults, right? They sort of, you never see their faces, you just hear their voices. I really love that. I think though, in that same vein of it being about nostalgia and about the unreliability of looking back on something that was ephemeral to begin with, right? They weren't really in a relationship. They weren't really in a friendship. It's just kind of that very weird interlude. It's an interlude really in their lives. I think the other thing is that it even In the Mood for Love is such a great title because our two protagonists in a way really are. They play act at love more so than you actually see them fall in love in any real way, because the whole thing starts from a shared pain and grief, right? And, you know, the times that they spend together at first is really them almost play acting an affair and then saying, no, but we're better than them because we're not going to do that. I'm just trying to understand how it is that the affair came about. And it's almost as if through the artifice of play acting at love that they fell in love. And even that is sort of just alluded to more than it is, you know, you never see them break into some sort of passionate embrace. And I love the idea of how much of the film is referential more than it is explicit.
I think it's very difficult to tell someone why they should watch this movie. And I mean that in a good way because, you know, you explain the plot, it sounds very simplistic. If you go on and on about cinematography and settings and metaphors and beauty and all of that, it's amazing. If you're a film nerd, you might watch it. But again, it might sound very highfalutin. But I think all of those things that you said about the story, I wanted to say that it's actually a story that anyone can empathize with. It doesn't, it's not sort of arty for being arty's sake. It's not complicated to the point where you're talking about people that no one can relate to. Actually, everything that these people go through, this notion of I expected life to turn out a particular way and it didn't, this idea of meeting someone and seeing a possible future with them that you don't necessarily know will happen. All of those things are so real and so human. And I think the great thing about In the Mood for Love is that it manages to present something that is so relatable, so real, so basic in the best of ways in such a gorgeous artistic package.
And also, I think as just like a pitch, like if you want to get someone to watch something like this, the runtime is perfect. So it's like an hour and 38 minutes. The way we are talking about it, if you've never seen the movie, it sounds like one of those like 2 hours, 35 minutes odysseys that, you know, just goes on and on forever as a very artsy film. But it's not. It's very compact. So, I mean, just pitching it as one of the most beautiful movies ever made, you're not going to waste a lot of time watching it. And there's not much to lose anyway, right? Even if you don't enjoy it. It's worth giving it a shot. It's very, very quick and it goes by fast.
I just want to say, because I think we're going to spend the second half, you know, diving into the aesthetics as well as the performance. I just wanted to say that there were many moments in this movie where I just went, ugh, because the shots were so beautiful.
Yeah.
So it was just, ugh, what is this? And it happens several times over, whether it's The kinds of shots in the hallways that we're talking about, whether it's them repeatedly walking down an alleyway, down a street, in the rain, the way that the movie plays with color, the way that it plays with its recurring sense of place, I just love it so, so much. We're going to talk about, or continue talking about, In the Mood for Love, which came out 21 years ago now, although it feels like it came out 60 years ago because it is, of course, set in the 60s. But it was released in 2000. It was written, produced, directed by Wong Kar-wai. It stars Tony Leung, Maggie Cheung, two people that we haven't mentioned enough. So we'll get into that after this. Let us know, though, have you seen or rewatched In the Mood for Love? Is it a movie that you enjoy? WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And today we're throwing it back 21 years to In the Mood for Love. And you know what? We have to talk about Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung, because most of the movie, 90% of the movie, is really just the two of them. And it simply wouldn't work if their performances weren't so understated and subtle.
Firstly, they're so, so beautiful that I just cannot even. Like, I mean, like Tony Leung leaning against a wall in an alley in the rain. Maggie Cheung in her multiple beautiful cheongsams just walking down and sort of glancing over her shoulder. My God, like, it's so beautiful. They're all art. Every frame in this film is art. But I think that the amazing thing about their performances is that they don't just rely on this, right? They needn't have done very much, but they do. And their chemistry is beautiful. It's so subtle. And that's a very sort of Wong Kar-wai film thing, where they don't overplay their hands, the emotions are not broad. But I don't know, I watch them and I feel like there are all of these videos about how they connected behind the scenes and all of these outtakes of them having fun. And you can see it in the product. You can see the closeness that's been cultivated, and it really pays off in the performance.
Because it would have been so easy to sort of chew scenery for a movie like this, right? I mean, for two very powerful actors who know exactly what they're doing, it would have been so easy to come in here and go like, you know, I'm the best at this and, you know, I'm the best at that. And put out like really big, like you said, like big emotion performances. But weirdly, their performances are so anti-loss and so anti-longing and to a certain extent also so anti-grief that you don't really feel the sadness that they are feeling, even though you know that they are very, very sad because of the stuff that's going on. And the way they get to pull that off without saying much and without showing it, but still getting you to know, is like, it's perfect. It's so, so good.
You know what I enjoy about it also is that the way their performances work, you don't want more. I think that there are times where you watch a performance and you're like, whoa, that was so understated. I just wanted the catharsis. I wanted the explosion. But the way that In the Mood for Love is structured and the way that their performances function, you don't really want them to kiss. It doesn't function like that. It's not like a rom-com where the moment of unification is the pinnacle of the film. You're like, finally they got there. And this movie is not like that, because that's in a way not the point. And I think because of that, the cadence of the performances also aren't building up to that. They're not kind of amping it up in any way. Instead, you just have characters who you fundamentally believe in, who you also understand very well. And they also introduce, I think, elements of darkness in a way that isn't overbearing. For instance, Wong Kar-wai has spoken before about how Tony Leung's face really goes a long way towards decreeping his character, because if it were a different actor, he mentioned John Malkovich, but I'm just going to pluck another one, say it's Christopher Walken, you know, playing this character. You wouldn't find it so charming that he's calling her at work. You wouldn't find it so charming that he keeps accidentally running into
You wouldn't want to see him
shop.
Waiting in the alley next to the noodle store. Definitely not.
Not in the dark. No. So, yeah, I think that they introduce sort of these subtle undercurrents of, are these characters that perfect? If they were really in a relationship, would they even have been happy? And they introduce these things without being explicit about it.
And I think that's actually the great thing about the movie itself, right? It's exactly what you said, Arvind, earlier about this idea of... yes, everything seems perfect because of this in the mood for love that it's all wrapped up in. But this isn't also real life. We're seeing 20% of 100% life. We don't know what the other 80% is. We don't know what these people are like outside of this relationship between themselves or what their marriages are like or what their contribution is. And in a way, I'm glad we don't. In a way, I'm glad I don't know what Tony Leung's character is like with his wife or what he's like at work or... because I think we both, I think we see them as human and we see them as an extension of how we would be in that scenario. And it's both the best and worst of ourselves in some ways.
I think the most amazing part is you mentioned the 20% that we are seeing. It's also the way this movie was made, right? Like Lynn, you mentioned the a story of food. Like that was his idea in the beginning. It all revolves around like food. And Wong Kar-wai had like a completely different plan for this project. And I'm thinking like what we are seeing, the hour and 30 minutes that we know as In the Mood for Love, is just 20% of what exists like as footage out there somewhere. There's a whole other movie. There's like 30 times the length of this movie sitting somewhere with completely different stories and completely different characters. And I was just like, just reading up on that, just knowing that this guy filtered it down to an hour and 38 minutes and gave us this film of all things. That's amazing. That has to be like on another level of picking and choosing, right? Because we could have got a completely different movie about completely different things with completely different people.
I mean, it was meant to stretch over decades, right? And then in the end, they kind of trim it down to just glimpses of a few different years.
This is what he does, though. I mean, he frequently starts with one story, ends up with another. It's partly why he wanted to work with Christopher Doyle for this, right? The cinematographer who also has quite an improvisational style, but who also subsequently stopped working with Wong Kar-wai because of the amount of time it takes to shoot his projects and the amount of I think rigorous sort of sitting with it, the time that it takes to actually shoot the whole thing or even shoot one scene to the way that they wanted it to. So I think what we're seeing is also a labor of love, the sense that it's come together not just in the way that it was performed, written and shot, but also in the way that it was edited and put together after, because that's quite important when you're talking about something that was supposed to be very long, then became very slim, and yet still travels Asia. Because while a lot of it takes place in Hong Kong, it's not entirely set there. They do move around to different locations. Each one has a different mood and feel as well. I don't know. I think it's quite fascinating, particularly the use of music, which we haven't spoken about yet. There is one recurring motif that just keeps playing over and over again. And I think that speaks in some ways to the trappedness that the characters feel in the fact that they can't move. They're stuck in this boarding house. They're stuck in this holding pattern with each other where they're unable to change anything and maybe they don't want to.
And that theme that you're talking about, it's actually not even an original score. I mean, it's not an original piece. It's Umeji's theme. It's from an older Japanese film. And I think that, again, falls into this idea of nothing is new. Everything is a circle. Everything is a reference to something else, because even the English song, even the sort of Western songs that he uses are all older numbers that he, you know, sort of plays into the different scenes. There's something, I think, Arvind, you used the word nostalgia earlier, and I think there's just so much nostalgia wrapped into this film, but not nostalgia for nostalgia's sake, because even when you look at the visuals, the way people are dressed, the way colors are used, the way the spaces look, it's all very, very... both nostalgic and timeless. This is a space that you want to exist in, because when you think of your best memories, when you get nostalgic for something, you never want to kind of leave that space.
Which is why I wanted to ask, like, what does the movie remind you guys of? Because for us, like, obviously it happens in the 60s, so it's not supposed to be nostalgic for us because it's in the 60s. But like for me, I specifically thought about calendars in my grandparents' house, that sort of off color. Also like photo studios because of the filmy look. So everything very 90s. Obviously that wasn't the intended time period, but it still gets to give you some sort of nostalgia, even if you're not the people who grew up in that. era, manufactured or whatever, but it worked. So I wanted to know, like, what did it make you guys think of when watching the movie, or did it just make you think of the movie itself?
Am I allowed to be slightly lame and say that it reminded me of what it's like when you think of love at a particular time? You know, everything is in these high dramatic colors, all the emotions feel heightened, everything sounds and feels like it's a sort of just slightly more dramatic than it actually was. I think for me, it didn't remind me of a particular space or era, but it reminded me, everything about the film reminded me of a particular feeling.
So it may be nostalgic for nostalgia. I think that the way in which you enjoy that bittersweet feeling, right, the back and forth of nostalgia, of recognizing that it's over and yet being able to enjoy diving, kind of marinating in it almost, and saying, oh, times were good then. That's what it reminded me of. But also Hong Kong of a certain era. I think that there are filmmakers, particularly Asian filmmakers of a certain period, before the cities here started changing so rapidly, who really presented Hong Kong in a very particular way. And perhaps because he's one of the great art house directors of Hong Kong, Wong Kar Wai is definitely one of them. His vision of Hong Kong is so specific. And you see it play out in his more modern films, but you also see it come out in things like this, which have this longing for what it would have been like in the 60s. So that's what I thought of. But yeah, we have been talking today about In the Mood for Love. And in case it's not clear, we all really, really loved it. Recommend you watch it. Let us know if you have or if you plan to. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio or write to us at movies@bfm.my.